Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Ted Dodds.
Hello, I'm Ted Dodds, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our guest is Glenda Bovary, and I want to introduce you to Glenda by telling a story before I begin to interview her. When I was 15 years old, which is 65 years ago, I got a job carrying out groceries at Fur Food, and they trained us a little bit, the manager did, to say that we were to greet people with a smile and ask them if I could help them or to thank them. And that was a very serious thing because they said, the manager said, that any time Mr. Fur or Mr. Bovary, who I assumed then was the second in command, might come into the store. And sure enough, one day when I was on my knees stocking a shelf, a man, well-dressed, came down the aisle. I looked at him, smiled, asked if I could help. He said no. Next thing I knew was the manager, a few minutes later, called me back to the room and said, Mr. Bovary was here, and you greeted him in the aisle, and he wanted me to tell you that you did a good job. So I'm glad to have his daughter, Glenda Bovary, with us today. One of the major reasons I wanted to interview Glenda was that we could talk about parenting and grandparenting. She also is involved in foster child parenting. So, Glenda, welcome to this program, and would you introduce yourself a bit to our listening ears?
I'm a retired teacher. I also used to practice law. Now I'm just kind of a volunteer and a grandmother, a very grateful grandmother, and I stay pretty busy. But the best thing I ever did was to choose my parents. My brother and sister and I often talk about how lucky we are and how smart we were to have picked them out.
Please tell me, what's something you got from your parents? If you would, talk about both.
My mother was just a very strong and very gracious woman. But one of the things I'm most grateful for her is that she told my sister and me again and again in different ways, not always in the same words, you're smart girls. You can work, you can support yourself, a wonderful marriage is a wonderful thing, but you will be happy whether you're married or single.
Now, Glenda, that's a number of years ago. Where did your mother get such a view of women? I thought women were taught to get married, have children, and live happily ever after, not that they could be self-supporting.
Well, my mother's ambition in life was to be an old maid school teacher, and she told one story about when she was home, she started teaching when she was 18 years old, and then finished college in the summers and through correspondence courses. One summer when she was home at the farm near Acuff, a very nice young farmer boy came, and no one was at the house except her. She did not want that life. She'd grown up with that life, and it was hard. No one else was there. She hid in a closet until she was certain that he was gone, and so she continued being the teacher that she wanted to be. So that tells you a little bit about what she was like, but she was an extremely gracious and lovely person, and my dad as well. My dad was so much fun. We had a lot of fun together, but he was pretty serious too. We understood things like if we had a job, we were not to complain about it. We could get another job and be happy at it, but he really expected us to work hard and to be productive.
So how did your parents exercise discipline? I assume children growing up all need some help. How did they work with you when you were rebellious or didn't do a good job?
That was often the case with all three of us. One time when I was misbehaving in church and Mama took me out and tried to spank me, I learned don't laugh at your mother while she's spanking you. She just couldn't hit very hard, I guess. They talked to us, which was a lot worse than any spanking, I can tell you. My brother tells about a time when he came home from school and My mother had found a Playboy magazine in his room somewhere. When he got home from school, Daddy was there, which is never the case that he would be home so early. When Robert came in from school, the Playboy magazine was sitting on the kitchen table, and they just asked Robert to sit down and had a nice conversation with him and never mentioned the elephant in the room that day. I can remember my mother spending like a day teaching me to clean a bathroom and things like that. Another thing that they did is they just showed us things rather than doing those things or telling us to do those things. They would take us on Sundays. We're all dressed up. We would go visit at the hospital. We would go visit at the nursing home, not just family or church people, but an old customer of Daddy's from way back when. So they would send my sister and me, once I could drive, they would send my sister and me out to the nursing homes and such like to visit people at Christmas with fruit baskets. And so what we learned was that going to the hospital, going to the nursing home, being around old people or sick people, that was fun. That was great. We didn't know that we weren't supposed to like that because that's what we did. I can remember another time with Daddy going out to a nursing home where my cousin was. He had severe diabetes, had suffered terribly in the Battle of the Bulge many years before, and he was kind of losing his mind, sort of. And we went out to see him, and he spent the whole time, or at least the way I remember it, being really vulgar, using all kinds of words that just, you know, I thought I was going to faint away. And Daddy just continued to visit with him like it was totally normal. And I was just thinking, I can't stand this. I can't bear this right in front of my dad. He can't know about these things. Then we left, and I thought Daddy would say something, but he didn't. And I realized it didn't matter what my cousin John was saying. Daddy was there, and I was there because we loved him and because he needed our friendship and our love at that time. And that was all there was to it.
Often we use the word acceptance. Psychologists like to, theologians do. It sounds like your folks had this way of acceptance. And when you do that, sometimes people learn a great deal on their own, like your brother maybe with the Playboy and yourself with the person who cursed so much. How have you practiced that in your own life with your own children, if I've gotten the word correctly?
I don't know exactly what to say. I have only one child, a daughter, who's just about to turn 34 years old. I know that when my marriage ended and she was very young, I came back to Lubbock, and one of the reasons I came back to Lubbock, I guess the reason, was so that I could be around my family, my parents, and she was able to see that beautiful and very kind of exciting marriage that they had, the Church of Christ girl and the Catholic boy, and all the things that they kind of had to work out along the way. In our family, we agreed to disagree about a lot of things, and we were instructed that we did not bring up religion or politics around people because that wasn't going to work out well many times. I guess I could say that my involvement with CASA, with the court-appointed special advocates, and all those trips I've made to the children's home and the boys' ranch, seeing those children and into foster homes and so on, that has to come from my mother and dad. My dad always said that if any child is coming to the front door, he didn't care what they were selling, we were buying. We were always to encourage children.
Oh, there's that word acceptance again. We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Well, Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotz with our guest today, Glenda Bovary. Glenda, you've just mentioned that you had a Church of Christ mother and a Roman Catholic father. Could you tell us how that worked out on you as a child? How did your parents manage that?
They managed it very well, and I think it's because my mother's Church of Christ family adored my dad, and my dad's Catholic family adored my mother. I mean, how could you not? Mom and Daddy were so crazy about each other, and after about 20 years, she reeled them into the Church of Christ. It worked out fine. I can tell you a story about my brother's birthday celebration. Daddy was the eighth of 10 children, so I have gobs of cousins. And we were in Albuquerque for his birthday celebration, and there were a bunch of our cousins from El Paso. One of my cousins, Betsy, said, you know, I was just thinking my dad lived to be 29 years older than your dad. And they were so much alike, my Uncle Pete in El Paso, who is a doctor. And my cousin Betsy said, well, you know why, don't you, Glenda? And I said, no. And she said, all that clean living, it was your mother. Now, I'm not saying anyone else in that family, that fun, wonderful family, had dirty living. The main thing, I think, was that Daddy had quit smoking, whereas my Uncle Pete wasn't able to do that. We just had so much fun. It was just a much richer experience. I kind of feel sorry for people where there's not that diversity within their families because we work things out, because we love one another.
I noticed you said that you agreed to disagree. Did you have family settings, like around the table, or were there times where you had your discussions or your agreeing to disagree?
Well, we just would say what we think, and that would be about all there was to it, because, you know, no one was going to get upset at anyone else about something silly like that.
Well, how did that work? No one was going to get upset. I mean, as a pastor, I've worked a lot of years with people who get very upset over things, not only religion and politics, but dishes and dish towels or sheets. How did they work that?
My mother was the calmest, most in control person I have ever known in my life. And I think that was a big part of it. And then, you know, my mother and daddy were really crazy about each other, and neither of them could have achieved all they did without the other one, and which has to be the test of a really good marriage. And so it just worked. I'll tell you a story about my dad. My mother had Parkinson's disease toward the end of her life. She was not a large woman, but she had to have help with everything, going to the bathroom, getting up, sitting down. Her food, at the end, we were putting it through the blender so she could swallow it. And until Daddy's death, at 91 and a half, he cared for her, and I never knew it was much of a problem until his death, because he did it with such joy and grace. But I remember one Saturday morning that I went over there, and Mama's Parkinson's medication, we learned later, was causing her to have these hallucinations. And she was seeing all these little boys in the house who weren't there. Daddy was saying, shoot, there are not any little boys here. But anyway, we'd always said that Mom was the smartest person in the family, and so seeing her fail in some ways was sort of painful. And I said, oh, Daddy, this has to be really hard sometimes. And he just looked at me like I kind of slapped him. And then this beautiful smile that he had came on his face, and he said, oh, no, it's a privilege and a pleasure. She's my sweetheart. And, you know, I learned even more after her death how true that was, that she never failed to say thank you. She was always gracious, which was a great gift.
Would you say that was a major model, never fail to say thank you?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you a story about that. One time we were having lunch downtown on Sunday at noon, my daughter and I and my mom and my dad. My mother and I were just talking a mile a minute. And someone came in and refilled our iced tea glasses and then went away, and we didn't pay any attention. And as soon as we slowed down so that he could get his foot in the door, Daddy said, do you know that neither one of you said thank you to that young man? So I think they reinforced one another's values, in other words, and I think that made a big difference.
Well, I think it is a superb value to say thank you to people, to practice gratitude, one easily forgotten.
Uh-huh.
How did you learn that yourself, just watching them, or in your own life? How have you done that with your child?
I think that the longer I've lived, the more I've learned how hard life can be and how fortunate we are when we have a sort of a safety net of love and, you know, resources to pay the rent if you can't pay it or whatever. I'm not that I had that experience, but I've worked most of my life at Bexar County Legal Aid for a few years as a lawyer for people in civil cases for people who had a very low income. And then I've taught at schools where there's been a lot of poverty among those children. And it's just made me understand that the things I take for granted, not everyone can take for granted. I'll tell you one thing. When I was at Estacado High School and I was teaching seniors government and economics, and when I would have a problem with a student, it was often a student who was struggling academically, and I'd take him out in the hall to talk to him privately, and I would say sometimes, this always worked. I would say, do you want to be able to have a job and support a family? And the young man or young woman would say, yes. And I would say, now I understand that knowing the three branches of government or checks and balances or some of the things I'm teaching may not seem important to you, but I promise you that I will teach you some skills that will help you, and together we will figure out a way for you to get the training you need so that you can get a job and support a family. And that would go a long way, because kids, they have to have the vision that they can succeed before they see any point in trying. That was so very effective with kids.
That kind of conversational response to a difficult child, is that something your parents had too?
I believe it is. Yes, now, they had three pretty ornery kids. My mother said more than once, I have a good forgetter, meaning she would forget the things that we did. And that was a really good thing, because we weren't little goody-two-shoes kids. Wish we were, but we weren't.
Well, we will take a break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Glenda Bovary.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotz. Our guest today is Glenda Bovary. Glenda is a person who has intrigued me since I've gotten to know her just the last few years. I knew her father many years ago, just generally, but she has been an attorney and a teacher, and I asked her onto the program mainly because I wanted her to talk about the parenting she got from her parents and how that affected her. And she mentioned earlier in the program that she'd gone through a divorce, and she's given me permission to ask her about how her parents parented her in that divorce.
In many cases with my mother and daddy, I just feel like they're right here walking along with me because of the things that I saw as I was growing up and as I was grown up. And one of those things was when they came to see me. I was living in San Antonio, and my daughter, who was 3 years old, right after they learned that my marriage was ending, that was not my choice, but it was happening. I'd been married for 13 years. Charlie was my ex-husband's name. He'd been a part of the family for a long time. Anyway, so they came to see me, and I was feeling kind of sorry for myself, and not that I said so, but I was. But we were having a good time, and Daddy was asleep on the sofa when the doorbell rang because, as planned, Charlie had come over to pick up Bridget, our daughter, for an overnight visit. And so I went to the doorbell and said, hi, Charlie, and went back to get Bridget and to get her little strawberry suitcase. And my mother said to my sleeping father, Clem, Charlie's here. And he shot up off that sofa. And then they went outside, and Charlie was over by his pickup, not really eager, I think, to see. He knew they were there, and he wasn't eager to have that meeting. And I thought, well, what in the world? So, but I went and got Bridget, came back, and when I went outside, I saw them with one on one side and one on the other side of Charlie with their arms around him. And they were saying things like, isn't Bridget doing great? it's wonderful to see you, asking about their family, I mean, his family, just being totally kind and loving. And then, you know, great to see you, Charlie, as he left with Bridget. And then we turned and we're walking back into the house, and I was kind of stomping back thinking, I thought they liked me better than him. But then I took about three more steps, and I absolutely understood. That's what you do. That's how you treat people, even if they've done something that might be hurtful to someone that you love or to you. You're still the same kind of person, and you're not defined by what someone else does to you. You define yourself. That was just such a valuable lesson. They always expected me to be fine, for my daughter to be fine, not some pathetic, rejected child of divorce, but a wonderful young woman, which she is. They just taught that lesson without saying anything. I'll tell you another story about my dad. I think this was at Christmas, and I was home visiting over the holidays, and we live across the street from Tech Terrace Park, and this was during a time when a lot of people seemed to be throwing beer cans in the yards of the people across from the park. Daddy was out in the front yard picking up beer cans, and I went out there, and I said, "Oh, doesn't that just make you furious?" And Daddy looked at me with this big sunny smile, and he said, "No, I just picked them up." And I thought, yeah, again, you're not, you know, not letting someone else define or choose your response. You can live happily ever after or not, up to you.
As I see it, life is full of betrayal, which you felt in your divorce, and aggression, which the beer cans represented. And your father had a way of receiving that didn't respond in kind, that rose above it. Now, I would call that superb parenting.
I would, too. And besides the fact that they didn't really tell us what to do, they just did it. And I grew up in a family where they never criticized anybody. They seemed to like all kinds of people, people who were certainly had different views than they did. None of that mattered.
You know, without a need to criticize, for me, says that they had a deep inner strength. I wonder how they came by such strength or confidence that they were released from having to criticize people or return aggression or betrayal. Do you have any ideas how your folks developed such character?
I think they were just extraordinary people from the beginning. However, I'll say that my dad grew up in a family with, he was the eighth of 10, and particularly he looked up to his oldest sister, Catherine, who was almost like a mother to him. In Wellington, there were stories that the priest would come from Childress, but people might feed the horse, but they wouldn't feed the priest along the way. But in any case, I think there was just a lot of love and a lot of giving, even in their poverty, with his family. And I think my mother had a wonderful upbringing where her parents sacrificed. She was the oldest of four children, and she never really cried, but I did catch her with tears running down her face when she told about the fact that her parents arranged for her to take piano lessons in their poverty, and that her parents arranged for her to come to Lubbock the end of her next to the last high school year and her whole last year of high school because she wanted to get an education. She wanted to be a teacher, and they felt that she would get a better education there. And so my granddad would take her into town Sunday evenings, and she boarded with this lady, and then he'd pick her up on Friday afternoons, and she would go home, and she would spend the weekend, as the way she remembered it, washing diapers for her little sister. But I think both of them just had this strength that came from somewhere, and then they loved each other. My dad, he just wanted things to be fair for people. That was it, the way I saw it. I mean, if we were walking down the hall at the hospital, he would greet every child. He would smile at everybody. And he just seemed to be able to communicate, you know, all this positive stuff.
He smiled that day at me when I was a boy stocking the shelves. It made a great impression on me. Let me ask you, your folks had you visiting the aged, had you doing things for people who were poor. You spent a good bit of your life as an attorney or a teacher with disadvantaged people, poor people. What effect has that had on you in your life?
Well, of course, it's made me understand how extremely fortunate I am, but also it's just a privilege to be involved in other people's lives. I'll tell you another story that happened to me. about the first or second year at Estacado High School, I remember this young woman. I was teaching government and economics and as to seniors. Her academic skills were very low, and she was very unhappy about having me as a teacher. I had replaced a wonderful teacher, someone very important in the community, Lena Sheffield, and here I was trying to get her to work. She thought I was so mean. But she got better because I wanted her to develop the skills that were important to her. She got better and better. And then in the spring one time, one of my other students in that class said, "Ms. Bovary, you must not like kids because you only have one child." And I said, "Well, you know, I really do like kids. That's why I've chosen to teach." And this same girl who had been so angry at me before said, "That's right, Miss Bovary, we are your children."
Glenda, what a great story to end our talk with. I thank you very much for sharing. You've been so open. I think your folks must be watching and very pleased with you that you would be this open and straightforward about them and about your life. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Ted Dotts, and you've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with our guest, Glenda Bovary.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, working to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Radio.